Good morning. I'm glad to be here with you today. This is not really my thing, like, to speak. I'm a writer and a doer, not really a speaker and a talker. Even back when I was a little girl, if I had something important to say to my parents, I would write it on a note and put it under their pillow so that they found it at night. And if I had to talk to you, I would much rather be sitting like at a table, just me and you, hearing your story while I share mine with a glass of sweet tea that I would drink with a straw always. But here I am, and here you are. I have the privilege of standing here and sharing my story in my heart. I pray that he meets us both here this morning, that he helps me to say the words that he wants me to say, and that he helps you hear the words that he wants you to hear. I'm just going to share a little bit about what God's been teaching me lately. I'm going to have to mostly read it because I don't want to forget anything that I want to say, so thanks for your grace in that. I hope that sharing a bit of my story might encourage or speak to where your heart is today, and also that it would bring him glory because this is ultimately his story lived out in my crazy life. And at the end, I'm going to share a few of our favorite Christmas traditions as a family, just in case nothing I say is helpful or practical. Maybe you can at least have a tradition. So pictures, how's that happening? Okay, perfect. So 3 years ago, my husband and I and three of our children and my sister drove to Dulles Airport with way too many suitcases full of way too much stuff, and we got on a plane to fly to Africa for 3 weeks to meet and bring home two sons from Rwanda. We left our three-year-old son already, I'm like on the first page. I've cried through this so many times I thought I was done. We left our three-year-old son Sawyer behind with his grandparents. Obviously leaving him was really hard. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. About a month before we left, I remember my husband and I sitting on our front porch together, both of us crying and just trying to figure out if there was a way we could take him. It just hurt to leave him, but it was the wisest thing to do. He was only three, but the wisest thing doesn't necessarily mean it won't hurt. Next picture, thank you. Adopting our sons, Lincoln and Levi, cost us a lot. It was 2 years of endless amounts of paperwork, physical exams that we all had to get, around $50,000 handed over, a lot of it saved by us, some generously given by many people, some raised in yard sales, jewelry sales, t-shirt sales, anything we could sell that would give us some of the profit. We also all had to get a lot of shots, which for our younger kids was a huge sacrifice, before we traveled, and we had to wait so many days to hear who our sons would be. The waiting was a lot harder than I expected. I thought I had four kids. Waiting wasn't going to be a big deal, but it was. During that two-year process, once all our paperwork was done and sent over to Rwanda, we were then told to wait until they matched us with our sons. 3 months into that wait, the government in Rwanda decided to close the country to adoption, which international countries do sometimes. At that time, there were about 100 families waiting to adopt that also had their paperwork sitting on a desk in Rwanda. And we were nowhere near the front of the line. Things were really unknown for months. We didn't know what was going to happen. Were they going to honor the paperwork that they had already accepted? Were they going to just throw it all in the trash? Were they even going to tell us what they were going to do? During that unknown season of waiting and not knowing, I suffered with depression. As I was going through it, I didn't know that it was depression. I had never experienced it before, but in hindsight, it's really clear. They were really dark days, and it was the worst feeling to wake up every morning and hope that it would be gone and open my eyes and it would still be there, just kind of covering all of life in a dark cloud. This picture was taken during that time, and it's amazing how a picture can look fine. I'm sure it looks fine to you, but I can see it in my eyes and my smile. It's Christmas Eve, and it's just a forced happy smile, which is what a lot of life was like then. But after 6 months, it lifted. I remember the exact moment. It was amazing. Where I was standing and what I was doing, I was standing in my kitchen. It was quiet. It was in the afternoon. So all my kids were either at school or taking naps. And I prayed a really specific prayer that God would take it from me. I'd prayed the same prayer many times in the last 6 months. It wasn't like the first time I prayed that. But I felt it lift immediately as soon as I prayed that prayer. And I remember right after that, literally, this is embarrassing, literally tiptoeing around my kitchen like I was hide and seek, like it was going to find me again. I couldn't believe that it was gone, but it didn't. God had allowed it to come, and he took it away. And 1 month later, after that depression lifted, we got an email from the Rwandan government with the pictures of our sons. It was completely unexpected. Usually our agency got a heads up first before they knew that we were going to get the email, but nobody knew, and we just got this email one day with our sons' pictures in it. We were not next in line. There were many that were still waiting, but it was clearly time for us to get our sons. So that whole process, the money, the paperwork, the waiting, the depression, all of that happened to get us to this point of finally flying around the world with three of our kids and my sister to a country that we'd never been to. Maggie. Thanks. We met our sons for the first time just hours after landing. They placed a 4-year-old little boy and a 1-year-old little boy. Is the next one the same? In our arms. And we tried to be a mom and a dad to two boys who had no idea what that meant. They had lived their entire lives in an orphanage with over 100 other kids. They slept in a different crib every night. There were no diapers, so the smell was not clean. Our kids still talk about that smell. But the biggest thing was that they had no idea what family was. Levi, the baby, reacted to this huge change in his life by shutting down. So as a mom, holding a baby that did nothing but lie there like a limp rag was terrifying. I mean, he wouldn't even hold his head up. And Lincoln, the 4-year-old, had never been taught a thing or given a boundary or had any structure. Next one. No, oh, sorry. Okay. So if you're a mom, think about all that you've taught your kid from birth to age 4. Lincoln knew none of that. How to sit to eat, how to use a fork, how to drink. The first time that he drank out of a glass, like an actual glass, we were in Africa still, he bit the edge off of the glass. I like screamed and jumped up and had him spit the broken glass in my hand. And the next meal, he did the exact same thing. Like, that's the stuff he would do. You'd think, well, then he learned, but it would take him a while to learn. So we gave him plastic water bottles after that. He didn't know how to listen or how to respect property. He was like a crazy animal that was really strong and really loud. And we also didn't speak one word of the same language. So communicating was interesting, lots of charades. After meeting them, we still had a week more to live through in Rwanda, now with two new sons, and more paperwork and offices and waiting. Joshua, one of the sons that we brought with us, got malaria, we think. He had a fever for days that just kept going up, and we never took him to a doctor because we were in Rwanda. But our guide said that it was most likely malaria, and he gave us a vial of pills that he said would take care of it. So we gave it to him. I mean, the things that you do when you're in that kind of a situation. His fever went away. My sister and I both also got sick with like intestinal issues at different points. This picture is sitting on the floor of the airport in Ethiopia while our paperwork got processed to enter the country from Rwanda. First, Rwanda refused to issue Levi's passport for no apparent reason other than they felt like it, and it was just hours until we had to fly on to Ethiopia. They did finally give it to us, and then we spent 10 days in Ethiopia to finish the paperwork that we needed for them to enter the United States as citizens. We could not wait to be home after all that. We were living for stepping onto that plane to head home to the United States. It was a 17-hour plane ride. I was in the front of the plane with Levi, praying that he would sleep some. Pat was further back in the plane with Lincoln. He thought he had the easier end of the deal. And my sister Hannah was across the plane from Pat supervising our other three kids. Well, a couple hours into the plane ride, Lincoln pooped in his pants, the four-year-old. He was completely potty trained, so he wasn't wearing a diaper, and we didn't have any changes of clothes for him because he was potty trained. I had a bunch for Levi, which we didn't need. So Pat, my husband, he's like 6 feet tall. He took him into the bathroom, airplane bathroom, him and Lincoln in the bathroom, and he tries to clean him up. He threw his underwear away, I mean, because he was like, it was just needed to go in the trash. And then he used like every piece of Kleenex and toilet paper in the bathroom to try and clean him off. Then he sent Bailey, one of the daughters that we brought with us, to come and get the wipes from me that I had for Levi. That's when I knew there was a problem. But I couldn't leave Levi to go help him. So he cleaned him as well as he could, but both Lincoln and Levi had intestinal issues at first, and the smell was a lot worse than your typical accident. Like, baby wipes were not going to wipe the smell away. So Pat and the stranger sitting on the other side of Lincoln had to suffer through that smell for the rest of the plane ride. It was really awful. So once we landed and got our luggage, my sister and I like tore through the suitcases trying to find a change of clothes for Lincoln. And most of our clothes were all dirty by that point because we'd been in Africa for 3 weeks, but they were more clean than what he had on. And we took him in a family bathroom at the airport and gave him a bath in the sink. We like washed him like 16 times with soap, because there were all these people at the airport that were greeting us, and we couldn't, like, hey, here's Lincoln. I mean, you know, I think it worked fine, but it makes for quite a story. So his first impression was not as smelly as it could have been. Oh, that was us having fun in Africa. Sorry, the pictures are a little out of order. We did have some fun while we were there. That was just waiting. Yeah, go ahead. So this is arriving back at the airport. I've never hugged someone so hard as I hugged Sawyer when we got home. Next one, too. So we thought the waiting and the depression and the tons of money were hard before we left for Africa. And then we thought meeting them and living in Africa for 3 weeks was hard until we got home. Then we knew hard. Go ahead. The first 6 months were awful. I was at the end of myself by about 9 o'clock in the morning and got to the end of about six more of me by the end of the day. Lincoln, a lot of things in our home are referred to as before Lincoln and after Lincoln. We used to care about our belongings until he broke so many that we just couldn't. One day, a couple months after we'd been home from Africa, I went upstairs to take a shower. All the kids were home because it was still in the summer. And when I came back down the stairs, there were leaves that were from our front bushes all over the living room. And I just stood there on the stairs like my brain could not compute why things that were outside were in my house. Then I looked up a little bit from the floor and saw that the screen on the window had a huge hole in it. The windows had been open because it was a nice day, and I guess Lincoln just got curious about what the bushes felt like. So he just tore the screen open and like pulled the leaves in. And I had never told him not to do that. I mean, there's just stuff like that that would happen all the time. I couldn't, you know, anticipate what his brain would do or what he would do next. We've also had to completely change the way that we treat food and eat meals because he has some food issues. Food became such an issue at school. He stole food and lied about stealing food every day for a year and a half that I'm now homeschooling him. I have been for the last year and a half. And all our kids go to public school. I love our schools. I said I would never homeschool. You should never say never. I've also never cried or yelled or admitted to God that I cannot do this as many times as I have in the last 3 years. Go ahead to the next one. Many people like to draw the analogy between God adopting us as sons and daughters to us here on earth adopting sons and daughters, and I get why they do it, but every analogy breaks down somewhere, and this one breaks down when I'm in the same spot in the relationship as Jesus. When God adopts us, he loves us perfectly, no matter what we do. I have not done that with Lincoln and Levi. Not one day of their lives have I loved them perfectly, and sometimes I struggle to like them. But the biggest reason why that analogy bothers me is the distance that he went to adopt us. Yes, this story of spending all the time and money and getting sick and being sad to leave one son behind to have the time of his life with his grandparents and trying to teach a child that has never known what a family is how to live in a home with seven other people is full of sacrifice and obedience to what he asked us to do, but it was nothing compared to what God's done for us. He went so much further to adopt us. We went to Rwanda. He went to the cross. We gave of the excess that we had, but he gave his son. Colossians 2, 13 and 14 say, when you were dead in your sins and in the uncircumcision of your sinful nature, God made you alive with Christ. He forgave us all our sins, having canceled the written code with its regulations that was against us and that stood opposed to us. He took it away, nailing it to the cross. There truly are some beautiful parts to that analogy about adoption that I cling to every day. Being joined into a family by adoption is messy. Lincoln didn't leave all the mess behind in Rwanda. Learning what family means for the first time at the age of four has been very messy. The last 3 years have been strewn with hurt and tears and pain and forgiveness and seeking God with a desperation that none of us have known before. It's also been full of love and hope. Every person in our family, all eight of us, have been affected by this mess of adoption. There have been beautiful, beautiful things to come from it, but there have also been really hard things. We all have scars. It's one of the biggest reasons others questioned us when we were in the process. People would ask, "Don't you worry what this is going to do to your family, to the four children that you already have?" Our family looked perfect. Four kids, two boys and two girls, no big issues, I think. But in stepping out in obedience, every single one of us has seen God more clearly. We've seen his heart lived out. We've seen his love for us through others caring for our family, and each member of our family caring for each other in ways that we wouldn't have had to otherwise. But mostly we've grown closer to him. We've clung to him. I've never been able to read this sentence without crying. We've clung to him and been moved to a point where he was all we had to lean on, and he never failed. I'll gladly take all these scars that I've just read about over missing out on knowing his love. And Pat and I trust that God will use the scars that our children have for his glory as time goes on. Just like God uses our scars as his children for his glory in this world that we live in. Adoption is messy. We've seen it physically happen in our family, but it's just a small whisper of the mess that we all are as we come to Jesus as his daughters. We are a mess. We're broken people that need a family. And he welcomes us with open arms. We're forgiven and alive, and he will never walk away from us. I'm so jealous for Lincoln's love. I pray for it every day. As his mom, I so desire for that beautiful love to flow freely between us. But my jealousy is just a small whisper of God's jealous love for us. He wants us and our love flowing freely between us. He doesn't want us once we're perfect or rested or after we've worked through this phase or stage or whatever reason we put up to not welcome him into the heart that he made. He just wants us, exactly who we are and what we are right now. That doesn't mean things won't be a mess sometimes. He's not afraid of your mess. Just like we want to help Lincoln walk through his issues and learn from them and grow into the boy and the man that God wants him to be, so does God want to join us in our mess, to walk with us in it and help us learn and grow through it to be the women that he wants us to be. Just like we desire for Lincoln to relax and fall into our family and trust us to love and take care of him, so does God desire for us to relax and fall into him, just like we are. Christmas, the holidays, are supposed to be so happy and perfect and beautiful, right? But sometimes they can seem the messiest. The family gatherings and fun dynamics that come out with that, the stress levels bring out the best in all of our hearts. The struggle between buying too many gifts and wanting to keep our hearts on what Christmas is really about seems impossible to navigate, especially as moms. And some of us have pasts that come back alive as memories flood our hearts, and it's not all happy or beautiful. But that's why Jesus came, for that mess. Don't try to hide it or pretend like it's not there. When you hit a moment or hour or day that feels messy this month, remember that is the real meaning behind Christmas. That perfect baby boy that grew up to be a man and die for us was born on Christmas Day and came into our mess so that he could rescue us from it. Let him join you in it. Let his jealous love envelop you. I pray that we would all let this Christmas be the Christmas that's full of mess and a gratefulness for the Father that chose us to be his daughters while we were sitting in that mess. Thanks for letting me share some of my messiest moments. I do have to share really quickly before I share a few Christmas traditions that God is setting right some of the ugly mess in our home, little by little. I don't want to leave it like it was. Usually I don't think I can see anything but mess. But the other day, this was on my pillow. Isn't that ironic? From Lincoln, on my pillow. Complete with a picture of the two of us together. And it says, "Dear Mom, you're a great mom. I'm so happy God gave me a loving, kind, the best mom ever. You make me laugh. I'm happy you and Dad teach me about love and kindness. I love you so much." And he signed it, Lincoln Anthony Castro. That's grace right there. The fact that he can say those things to me. When there are days that I can hardly look at him and he says I'm the best mom ever, there have been days where we've both cried more than we've laughed or even smiled, and he says I make him laugh. God's grace on both of our hearts. Okay, now I'm going to share some Christmas traditions. But before I do that, I want to make something really clear. These are ideas that work for our family. They bring us joy, and they're fun for us. I'm not sharing them for you to compare or for you to add anything to your to-do list. If something I share like sounds like something your family would love, then do it. If not, just forget about it. Don't like let it stress you out. Okay, I have little props. The first one is that the first gifts that we open at Christmas are for Jesus. So earlier in the month, my husband and I decide on an amount that each child can spend on their present for Jesus. And then we give them the World Vision Catalog. Most of you familiar with this catalog? When we pull this thing out, it's like we pull out the Toys R Us catalog. They get so excited about it. But the gifts in here aren't toys. They're like ducks or soccer balls for kids that have no toys or education for an orphan that, you know, has to pay for their education. So we give them an amount, and they spend a few days looking through it. And they're like circling it. And I mean, this thing will be like torn apart. And then I pull each of them aside separately, and they tell me the gifts that they want to buy for Jesus so that nobody else hears which gifts they're buying. Then we order the gifts, and World Vision sends you a card that says what you ordered. And then we have this wrapping party, just our family. And we wrap, each person wraps their gift for Jesus in like the fanciest stuff we can find. Most of my wrapping is like just paper, like no bows or anything. But for this, we put like bows and ribbons, and it's all kinds of fancy. And then those are the first presents that we open Christmas morning, and the kids are so excited to share what they bought for Jesus because it's secret still. So they're just so excited to share what they chose to buy for Jesus. It's really precious, and I would be happy if Christmas ended right then. Another tradition that we have is before December starts, I wrap 24 gifts, and most of them are books or movies that we already own. And then it makes us read that book or watch that movie on that day. Or it might be just a small box of lights that tells the kids we're going to go drive around and look at lights that night. I started doing this years ago because we would put out our stack of Christmas books and never read them, and then I would just put it back in the basement. So at least this way, each book gets read once. I have six kids, so since there's 24 gifts, each kid only gets to open four gifts throughout the month. We figure out a rotation, and they know it, so I don't have to keep up with it. The last tradition I'm going to share with you is super simple, but it's another one of our favorites. It's all falling out. The day that I'm going to mail all my packages at the post office, we bring a bowl of candy. Going to the post office with my kids in December is not one of my favorite things. So one year, I decided to stop complaining about it and think of others. Like, if I'm feeling that way, then everybody else is probably feeling that way that's there. So while I wait in line, my kids walk up and down the line with this bowl of candy and offer candy to everybody in the post office, even the workers. It is incredible to watch the whole atmosphere in that place change. Like, first, when you walk in, everyone's, like, in line, and they're slightly annoyed, and they're all, like, on their phones, and, you know, nobody's looking at each other even. And once my kids do that, you would be amazed how many people take the candy. Of course, some people are like, what do you, you know, do I have to give you money? Like, but the whole atmosphere changes. Everyone starts smiling and talking to each other. And I mean, so I was telling this to somebody else, and they were like, so how long do you stay there? Like, as long as it takes for me to get through the line and mail my packages. Like, I'm not there for 2 hours. It's like a 20-minute ordeal. One year we went back and did it again. We did it twice because it was so fun. So that's all I have. Thank you for letting me share this morning.